A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Bridge Street Capital Partners is a Sydney-based corporate advisory firm that specialises in equity capital market transactions for small-cap companies listed on the ASX. Primarily in the mining, energy, and tech sectors. If you are a Section 708 sophisticated investor and would like to be on Bridge Street's distribution list for their upcoming capital raises, please send them your details via an email to invest@bridgestreetcapital.com.au and mention the BIP show in your message. Now, on with the show. How are you now? Broadcasting from the VFS studios in Northbridge, Sydney, you are listening to the all-new BIP Show, Season 4, Episode 15. This is the last episode of the season. I'm taking a bit of a break next week, and then we'll be back on straight afterwards with new stuff. Don't forget to hit subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that all of the financial information, if there is any, in this podcast is general in nature only. Speak to a professional advisor about your needs. Coincidentally, that is what I do. My name is James Whelan, investment manager at VFS Group. I skipped Davos to be here. I know it's the sacrifices that I made. Also, if everyone is taking some time away from watching a certain court case that's going on right now, thank you very much for doing so. And joining us on the podcast today, I hope that we can really help you out. This episode is being recorded. It's 9:58 in the AM Australian Eastern. Are we standard time or daylight time? Whatever. It's 9:58 AM. It's the 24th of June 2022 AD in the year of our Lord Jesus Christ. Today's guest is an old friend of mine. Now, nothing screams finance podcasts more than a couple of white guys that went to the same school, but he's an old mate of mine. We talk markets and have talked markets for years. We've been in a few scrapes together, and it's always good. He's from New York. Oh, sorry, he's from Sydney. He's currently in New York, ex-London. Is the son of, although this isn't this does not make the man. This isn't a label, but he just happens to be the son of Jonathan Payne, the author of the Payne Report. He's worked on the Payne Report himself as well, and does contribute to some amazing things as well. Ex-London macro strategist David Payne. David, how are you now? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, James. Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Mate, it's a real cracker. Now, look, this week I've sort of been sideways on markets, and I think the markets have sort of been sideways as well. It seems like there's a push-pull that's going on. Crude has been my indicator on if the world thinks that growth is happening. And it seems that crude coming off is sort of a bit of an interesting situation. It also seems that food coming off, and I've been a food bull for ages. We've seen food prices come down as well. Rate rises going up through the roof, which seems to have freaked everyone out, but sort of actually really hasn't. We've seen that the 10-year treasury that went up and touched a certain number, about 3.4 or something like that, has actually been smacked back down again. We've got central banks telling us that things are heading towards a recession potentially, but aren't really heading towards a recession. Look, I'm just going to hand it to you. What are you saying, mate?
Yeah, look, I mean, look, that. Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it just then. I think obviously it goes without saying that inflation is the big story right now. That's why it's sort of driven, you know, what's happened this year. And it's, you know, it's important to point out that this 6 months, or like nearly 7 months now, is, I think, the fastest bear market, or close to the fastest bear market in history. It's been the fastest decline in PE multiples close to history, if not in history. Now, it is worth pointing out that part of that is because, you know, the S&P, I'm using the S&P as a proxy here, finished basically on its highs last year at the end, on the final trading day last year. So there is a little bit of a calendar bias creeping in there. Yeah. But nonetheless, this has been an incredibly fast deleveraging in every sense of the word. You know, we've had, as you mentioned, you know, some very aggressive rate hikes already this year. Most recently, the 75 bips from Powell, having said a few weeks ago that you know, 75 bips was off the table, they then went and did it. And I think it's going to be, you know, at least 50 the next meeting. And I think you know, this number's moving, but we're looking at something 3.4% in the US at the end of the year, around that. But yeah, as you alluded to, it is all driven by inflation. Oil and gas, oil and energy, the entire energy complex is by far the biggest, you know, driver of that, I think, because it feeds into everything, right? So, you know, if you food prices, furniture prices, airfare prices, yeah, you name it, everything,
transportation, the whole thing. Yeah.
Everyone uses energy. So, it's interesting because, you know, the oil price, you know, I'm using West Texas here as the proxy, has fallen, you know, quite substantially in the last, 2 weeks or so, somewhat unexpectedly, I think. And I think it's being driven very largely by this, you know, renewed chatter about a potential recession in the US, which I think is going to happen. I think Europe and the UK are, you know, if not in a recession, but will very, very shortly be in one. But I think the US is also going to be coming to recession. And I think, you know, whilst Powell, you know, he's been speaking to the Senate this week, today my time, and yesterday my time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he's been saying that, you know, they're trying to avoid a recession, et cetera, but he's never going to admit that. I think the demand side of the equation on inflation, because inflation is driven obviously by demand and supply. So, you know, either of those two can cause inflation if you have a lack of supply or excess demand. He can control the demand side of that equation, right? He can kill demand by raising rates. He can't control the supply side of that equation because he doesn't control, you know, oil supply. And we're seeing, you know, efforts to mitigate that supply side of part of the equation. You know, Biden is swanning off to Saudi to beg them hat in hand,
good enough
to increase production, having bad mouth them for many, many years.
Yeah.
So Powell can't control that. He can't control the supply side, but he can control the demand side. And I think he'll never say it, but I think they will try and engineer a recession.
Yeah.
I think they're going to cause a recession, but, you know, engineering or not, I think it's a fait accompli now. So what that leads to in terms of markets is, I think, a quite interesting conundrum now, because, you know, the markets, as you know, are always forward thinking. So we've got a situation where the market has now got, okay, rates went through the roof for the better part of, you know, 2022. They've actually just very recently, in the last week or so, turned around quite aggressively, and that's coincided with the decline in the oil price.
Yeah,
And that is because of this increased, you know, risk of a recession. Because the bond markets are now thinking, right, what do we do? What's going to happen next? Where are we? You know, in terms of peak inflation, is it next month? Is it the month after? Is it 3-6 months away? If it's 3-6 months away, then, you know, we still have a lot more rate hikes to come. But the market is, you know, the bond market is trying to predict, you know, when that peak is coming. And I think that there has, with this talk of a recession, that's probably come closer than it was certainly a week ago, and that's hence the move in the bond market.
Yeah. Going through, so from a market's perspective, and this is sort of, I'll start this question, yeah, in similar sort of way that I've asked a few times ago, that talking about the one thing that was missing from the Bank of America fund manager survey last month, from their bullish indicator, a contrary buy indicator, and it wasn't triggered because the last thing that was missing was capitulation. And there was they didn't see a capitulation. And one of their key indicators for capitulation was a negative outlook on 3-month rates. Mm-hmm. So up until recently, there was a very bullish indicator for where yields were going to be on the 3-month. Mm-hmm. What's it going to take for that to turn negative? That might be a little bit too specific, but if you've got that answer, then go for it. And then I'm going to go somewhere else with this.
What's it going to take to turn that negative? I don't know.
Ditch it. Yeah.
Look, I think this rates market is being driven by oil primarily, and this recession chatter. It's not a coincidence that oil has fallen off a cliff, and, you know, rates have come off a fair bit in the last week or so. It's all an energy story. If we do see a continued, you know, decline in oil prices, I think bonds will continue to rally, i.e. rates down.
Yeah.
We've got to say it.
When yields go up, bond prices go down, and vice versa. Every single finance, everything has to say it, guys. If you don't know that yet, then you do know. Good. Sorry.
Sorry.
It's a running joke we've had for about 3 years now. It's okay.
Bonds are down.
Yeah.
Look, and I think what I would say here is, you know, we've had, as I mentioned at the start, this huge decline in PEs, huge decline, as I said, you know, close to the fastest ever, and a huge deleveraging across hedge funds, everything. There's been a mass deleveraging across the financial system, and a huge amount of risk taken off. Now, what's interesting to me here, it's a bit contrarian, and I think it's probably a bit early, but, you know, we have these headlines of things like Facebook and Netflix and PayPal going into the Russell Value Index. I think things like that are quite interesting because tech got bombed out the most and the hardest, in particular the mid-cap, but also the names like Netflix, PayPal, etc. These guys were down anywhere from 50 to 75%. And obviously they were down because rates went through the roof. You know, their growth plays, that's the best way of playing, you know, long dated growth in the equity market. If you think your yields will stay low, you buy tech. That was the trade for what, 8 years, if not
longer. Worked to trade as well.
Exactly. That trade completely reversed in about 6 months to 9 months. Anyway, so these stocks have been completely bombed out.
It took about 10 minutes for some of them, but yeah, go on.
Exactly. So if you think, though, that we are at or near peak inflation, and you think that multiples, some of these tech names, such as, you know, the Netflix, PayPal, Facebook, are getting interesting.
Mm.
The contrarian play right now might be to look at US tech. Because if we do get a relief in lower rates, you have to believe that the tech sector is going to be by far the biggest beneficiary of that, having been the most beaten up. Mm. As I said, it's a little bit contrarian. It's
going to be early.
Possibly a little bit early, but I think that's the sector. If you were to, you know, to say to me, where do you think it's going to be much higher in 18 months? I'd say the tech, you know, tech names, some of those bombed out tech names. I think things like Netflix, PayPal, etc., being put into the Russell Value Index for the first time in their ever history is probably a bit of a, you know, it's one of those signs that comes along and you think, wow, we're going to look back on that in 3-4 years time and go, oh, you remember when Facebook was in the value index? It was like a multi-year low. Now, is that 3 months away? Possibly. I don't know. But, and I don't know what people's individual timelines are in terms of their investments. But I think, you know, the next big bull market will probably happen in tech. I think, you know, we've got further to go in commodities, particularly in certain commodities. But I think the easy money has been made in commodities.
Yeah.
I think, you know, everyone's coming to that party now. It doesn't have an original idea. I think they're coming to that party, you know, probably a little bit late.
Yeah. Now, sort of moving on from that. Now, the reason why I think it's early is because we haven't actually seen capitulation yet. I mentioned the 3 months. Don't worry about that. But to you, and everyone sort of has a different outlook on what capitulation actually looks like as to when it's going. You know what? That's the blood in the streets that everyone's talking about. The Buffett quotes come out. Actually, what is it? I mean, and we've been through a couple of cycles or couple anyway. We've been through a couple of pretty ordinary situations. What does it look like to you? Like, what is the actual, you know what, that's enough. Now we've actually got to lock in some cash here and load up.
Oh, you know, what's that famous expression? They don't ring a bell at the bottom. I mean, I think you'll know it when it happens. I think you're right. I don't think you've seen the capitulation, certainly in the S&P. I don't think you have seen that. You also have, don't forget, you know, recessions are not friendly to markets in terms of fundamentals. You know, we're not going to, earnings expectations are still way too high. I think they're forecasting something like 10% earnings growth this year. That number is complete farce.
Yep.
You know, the reason PE multiples have come down so much is because that number just is a fiction. So we need to see a massive re-rating in terms of earnings growth. Margins are going to get killed. I mean, look at it from a business perspective. And I'm taking the US here.
Obviously, assume everything is a US man. It's good.
Look at the US consumer. You're now paying, you know, near record prices for gas or petrol. You've got inflation running at 9% everywhere. Wage rises are de minimis at best. You're certainly not keeping up with inflation. House prices are kind of falling off a bit of a cliff now. So there's a massive wealth effect there. Mortgage rates are going through the roof. The consumer is getting killed, right? So earnings are not going to be 10% this year. They're just not. Will they be down? Yeah, I mean, I would say they're more likely to be down than up 10%, definitely. I don't know what the number is going to be, what they finish minus 5, 10, whatever. But my point is, earnings multiples are artificially have come down a lot, and they're screening cheap. But that's because the actual estimate for earnings hasn't come down enough to reflect the new reality. So in terms of what the low will look like, it will look like when, you know, you have the S&P properly pricing in negative earnings for this year and probably a decent chunk of next year as well. And I think you'll certainly see new low. I don't think we've seen the low in the S&P. So for this. So I think we're going to have new lows when we could have a five more percent rally here. I'm not going to pretend I can call all that that exactly, but I just don't think this doesn't feel like a low. I think you're right in that sense. But these, look, I will say this though, these bear market rallies can be vicious. You know, you saw it in March or so. I think it was March earlier this year. We hit a huge rally.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of people by surprise. Everyone, you know, so don't underestimate the scope of bear market rallies. They can really take people by surprise, and they can really mess things up. So we will likely see new lows, but you know, at some point. In fact, I'm almost certain of it. And then as to when we'll see the real low, I think you need to see big downgrades in these earnings expectations. And I think people need to come to terms with the fact that margins are going to get killed for companies. You know, the companies have, you know, every, you know, I think Qantas is striking now. Half of the UK is striking. They don't have a big union presence in the US, so they're not striking, but they're certainly demanding higher wages. But basically, my point being, from a business perspective, you've got the consumer getting killed and you're having to pay your staff more.
Yeah.
So earnings expectation is they have to come down.
Yeah, that's probably after mid-year, after the next reporting season, we'll see a bunch of downgrades come through, and the analyst reports will just be re-rating, earnings come down, then PEs theoretically, based on the mathematics, would go back up to a certain area that would be a little bit higher based on the back of the envelope maths. And there's a point, I mean, that's where it's going to be, oh, but wait, the PE ratio is actually, you know, five points higher than where you had it last week. It's like, yeah, that's the time to buy, potentially.
Yeah. Because our earnings number is actually going to be 25% lower than what you got to the market.
Yeah.
I would say, actually, just to add on to this, with earnings season coming up, this is something that I kind of watch for quite a lot. And we saw it a little bit in the last earnings season with some certain tech names. Watch for companies not going down as much as you'd expect on a miss. When you start seeing that happening, that's usually close. You're usually close to a low. When companies are, you know, having horrible numbers and you think, oh my God, they're going to be down 10, 15% and they're only down 2, 3%, that's a bit of a tell. It's not foolproof, but it's a little bit of a tell. And it is, you know, there are exceptions to that. It's by no means a rule. But if you start seeing, and we did see certain tech names doing that, behaving like that last earnings season, which that basically is telling you the shorts are all in. No one who is, you know, optimistic is long this stock. And it tells you that the sector's a bit beaten up. I would, you know, as if you want a bit of a tell at the next earnings season, watch your stocks that don't miss, don't fall as much on a miss. And conversely, by the way, watch for stocks that don't rally on a beat. That's the other, because that tells you the other way around as well.
It's just follow the money.
It's a very, very useful little indicator for kind of underlying strength.
I like that. So if you're pleasantly surprised, in that something hasn't been smashed, that's where you want to be. A quality tech is what I'm sort of leaning towards at some point in the next half of the year. So that's where that's going to be. I want to make sure that everyone's got a really good piece of Google. They already do. They're going to get Google a little bit lower price, and that's how that's going to be. That Microsoft, T-Mobile, amazingly, is actually on our list as well. So there's some names for it. Now, do you want to talk about Europe? You mentioned it.
I think it's a basket case.
Good enough. Yeah, go on.
I mean, what do you say about Europe? I mean, they've got the world's most incompetent central bank, certainly in the developed world. You've got a literal serious war on your doorstep. Germany is, I mean, I don't even know what Germany's up to these days. You know, they're switching off gas in favor of coal because it appeases to a certain political element over there. I mean, it's a basket case. I mean, Europe is a complete one, and I include the UK in this. There are lots of great companies there, but you have this, you know, mess politically. No one can do anything. Now Macron's now basically a lame duck president. I'd not underestimate Russia from here. I really wouldn't underestimate Russia. You know, they took most people by surprise with this Ukraine stuff, and I don't see them ending that mess soon. How can you get positive on Europe while that's going on in their backyard? I mean, look, I think Europe has been the dog for a long time for the right reasons. I think it will continue to be the dog. I think the US is far more interesting. The other thing that's been wiped out a bit, you know, and maybe if you think, I don't think it, but if you think the dollar, US dollar is going to fall finally, emerging markets, some emerging markets might be interesting, but
I think, you know, I mentioned it before, I think US Tech is, if I was, I'm not long anything, but if I was going to be long something, that's probably what I would be looking at in the next month, 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah. What's your view on the dollar?
I don't have a strong one. I mean, I think it doesn't take a genius to say it's going to go higher. I think everyone thinks that as well. So I do think it's going to go higher. It should do. I mean, every other central bank is being slow. I mean, other than, you know, some quite niche kind of pairs against the euro, against the pound, against, you know, the Aussie as well. I think it's going to keep going higher. They're the most serious central bank, and I think we're seeing a bit of a political element to that as well, because I think, you know, Biden, quite frankly, has said to Powell, "You need to save my job, save my party," because to do that, you have to kill inflation. And this is why Powell went from, you know, uber dove to all of a sudden being, you know, this ultra hawk, and he's actually, you know, failing to convince the market. And I think that's why they had to do 75 bps at this last meeting, because otherwise the market was going to take the chance.
The Fed guys stopped being able to trade on their own accounts too.
Yeah, sure, that definitely had a part of it as well. So my view, I think it's, look, I don't have a strong view on it. I think it will continue to go higher. The currencies are pretty much just a rates play, right? Do you think US rates are going to slow down from here? I don't.
No.
Which country do you think is going to increase its pace of rate hikes? I mean, you tell me. You probably know more about what's going on in the Australian rates market. They kind of seem to have got it poorly wrong as well. You know, I think they attempted yield curve control at one point last year.
Phil Lowe had to apologize for missing so badly on everything that they did last week, and it was a big sort of just like on his sword. Sorry, lol.
When they were all saying inflation is transitory in every country, basically in the world, I thought, okay, yeah, they're just saying that because it's politically beneficial. They don't want to admit it's real. I didn't realize they actually believed that inflation was going to be transitioning. But apparently they all did, because none of them seemed to have predicted any of this, which is amazing to me, because if you shut down the entire world economy for 2 years and pump trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars into it to pay people to sit at home, basically, that's probably going to be inflationary. If you shut down all oil and gas exploration for, you know, 5 years plus, basically, lo and behold, you're probably going to have a supply crunch issue on you know, oil and gas prices. So all these policies have ended up being hugely inflationary. I think most of the mainstream kind of, you know, media, I guess you could call it, genuinely believed it was going to be transitory, and lo and behold, it's not. So, I don't think, you know, the Australian Reserve Bank governor was alone in that miscalculation.
I'm just wondering about the poor young couple, you know, the 35-year-olds that have saved up and scrimped up, and they're just like, okay, who are we going to listen to about where rates are going? Okay, we get it. It's time to get a loan. The RBA has said they will not be raising for a while. We're going to be okay. Bill Evans is, you know, basically the mouthpiece of the Reserve Bank. Mm-hmm. Same thing. This is where they're going to be. You take that trust and you take that faith, you go to the market, you get your loan, and then a few months later, just out the window. Sorry, guys, you're screwed. That I'm incensed by that in a way that I really shouldn't be, because I know this market and I know how it works, but I'm just like, people have trust in that.
I completely agree. And the thing is that, you know, inflation is an awful, awful tax, because it targets the, you know, the lower and working classes the hardest.
Yeah.
It is a tax. You know, it is a tax. That's the way it should be thought of. It's a huge tax on it's lower income working class kind of groups that tend to bear the worst cost of it. You know, it's people who can live in the eastern suburbs and not have to drive. Are very, 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 very easy to talk about.
I know what you're talking about here. Yeah.
How gas prices should be more expensive and all this kind of stuff. But tell us, someone living in Parramatta who has to drive, you know, an hour each day.
Yeah, exactly.
They, you know, have to pay X amount more. I think you know, it's quite cruel.
Yeah, middle class. It's an expensive lifestyle being middle class. Trust me. Finally, ESG, mate. I know that I wanted your view on ESG. We've touched on oil. I'm starting to see sort of that a lot of ESG stuff is getting unpicked. The thread in the sweater is being pulled, and potentially destroyed. Mate, did you have any views on the ESG side?
I think it's rightfully being picked apart. I think there's a I mean, look at this stuff with Elon Musk. I mean, regardless of what you think of Elon Musk, I mean, I think it's a bit ridiculous that Tesla gets kicked out of the ESG index just because he dared to buy Twitter, you know? That decision hasn't happened as a coincidence. It's not a coincidence, right? I think a lot of this, I've been watching this ESG stuff, you know, for coming out of the banks and things, and I've always kind of, you know, to be perfectly honest, I've never really been interested in it at all. I think it's a bit farcical, to be honest. And I think now that the kind of political element to it is being exposed, and I've not heard a convincing argument that it's done much good in the world. I think it's being, I think it benefited from a low rate environment when a lot of the kind of companies that were supposedly, you know, low carbon footprint, etc., you know, were doing well. And that was a coincidence.
Yeah.
It just so happened to look better than it did. And I think now, you know, what's the best performing sector this year? It's energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how's ESG done this year? I don't know. I guess it's done pretty poorly.
It's underperformed because energy's not in it. That's the basic fact of life in that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, look, that's that. David, anything else you want to touch on? Go for it now. Speak now or forever hold your peace, and I'll let you get back to bed.
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. James, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. It's been really great to catch up with you. I've really enjoyed this. You know, congratulations on setting it up. And great to speak.
Thanks a lot. And congratulations on the next one coming along. I think I saw an Instagram post, mate. So good on you for that. Love to the cheese and kisses, mate. And look, we'll sign off now. Thank you very much for joining us on the BIP Show today, sponsored by Bridge Street Capital Partners. Thank you very much, Bridge Street, for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe. We're on iTunes. We're on Twitter. David, you're on Twitter as well?
I'm not on Twitter, no.
What? You what? Really? Okay.
No, not too bad. You're probably not surprised by that, but I'm not.
Okay, that sounds weird. I'm on Twitter, JamesWhelan42. Usually talking about something not very sensible, but it's Twitter, so who cares? Look, and if you want to catch up, get onto my website, Whelan Capital. And if you want to know anything else, then go to VFS Group, that we can help you out with anything you need in a wealth management space as well. Yep, that's it. The show is produced by this drunk monkey right here. I'm going to get it out and done. I'm going to have a shower and I'm off to a lunch for breast cancer awareness. I think that we're against it, so that's it. But I'll leave some wiggle room. Definitely against it. Wearing pink ties today, so it's going to be a good old long lunch. Dig deep at this one, so see how we go. And then I'm taking a week off next week, so that's it. So the BIP Show will be off next week, and then back on after that with some amazing things. So thank you, Dave, mate.
Thank you, James.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you later.